PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the Original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week, and keep me honest here, is the co-founder and CEO of Sunday Golf, Mr. Ronan Galvin. Did I nail it?
You did. Nice job.
It's great to have you on.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah. I want to get started because Sunday Golf is something I've seen around quite a bit over the last few years. But I think the best thing to do would be to jump into the history of the brand, what got you started, things like that. I think you're over 5 years, coming on 6 or 7 years old at this point.
Yeah, officially launched August of 2020, which is crazy to say because I feel like it was just yesterday we were saying, you know, 2021 or 2022, you know, and we were still pretty young. And now you're like, well, you're 5 or 6 years in, you know, it's you're not the young darling anymore or anything like that. So, we had originally planned to launch in January or February of 2020. And as you know, that's when COVID happened. And at first we were like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? Because, you know, our manufacturer in Asia said, hey, the ports are closed. And, you know, I can't tell you honestly when, you know, your container of golf bags is going to arrive. So kind of sat on our thumb in a way for the better part of 6 months from February to August. But it did, you know, in retrospect or in hindsight, it gave us time to kind of get our ducks in a row, built the brand a little bit more on social. And COVID was really bad for a lot of reasons, obviously, but it was great for golf. You know, golf, you know, in 2019, up to 2019, started 2020, and it kind of plateaued a little bit. You know, it wasn't very fun. Tiger was kind of out of the picture, et cetera, et cetera. But then because of COVID lasted so long that it brought a lot of people back to the game and introduced a lot of people to the game, right? And I think if COVID was 2 weeks, maybe people would have played golf for those 2 weeks and say, oh yeah, I played golf once and, you know, now I'm back to regular life, right? But it lasted so long, it created a habit for a lot of people. So we were just super fortunate to be in the right place at the right time, I think.
Mm. But you started in golf, or at least you had worked in golf previous to making this jump, right? Was it in golf bags as well?
Yeah, it was very specific to golf bags, actually. So for the greater part of like 10 to 15 years, I was in product development, sourcing and manufacturing for golf bags. I'm from San Diego, grew up in San Diego. So obviously a lot of the big guys like Callaway, Titleist, TaylorMade, Cobra, et cetera, are all based in Carlsbad. Yeah, I got involved in product development and sourcing and helping those guys manufacture their bags. And that's kind of where I cut my teeth. And I was actually at the PGA show, I think in 2018. And one of the suppliers I worked with was actually a component supplier for tops and bottoms of golf bags. So they just made the top, you know, the top of a golf bag and the base and like the leg stand system, you know, and one thing we were displaying were these tops for like Japanese style tops for golf bags that are just kind of proponent to players in Japan. And the whole time we're at the trade show booth, people say, oh, where can I get this bag, you know, and we're like, oh, well, we just make the component of it, right? And so that's kind of where the idea came from. And then I went to the par three course here in San Diego, and I noticed that a lot of people were either just bringing their full size bag with their full set of clubs, number one, or number two, taking out half their clubs and then still carrying around their full size bag. I said, oh, that didn't make a lot of sense. So kind of doubled back from 2 years prior about this one top that we had. And then I was able to kind of, you know, redesign and just with my connections over there, to develop what I called a par three bag at the time, you know, just built to hold 4 or 5 clubs, right? And it came with like a handle. And so I think that was the true innovation, if you want to call it, versus the traditional Sunday bag, right? It had no legs and you still had to like put it down on the ground, you know, pick it up and throw it over your shoulder. By adding the handle, people were able to just kind of, the legs were able to extend and pick it up and keep going. So that's actually where I'd been in the golf industry for, you know, 15 years. I wouldn't define myself as a golfer in the true sense. You know, I didn't grow up golfing. Picked it up in 2018, 2019. And, you know, once I started going to the par three course, it was like, oh, this doesn't make a lot of sense. And when I came out with the prototype, there was two or three other groups that day at the par three course that said, hey, where'd you get that bag? You know, and it's, oh, I just made it for me because I like playing the par three course and it's more convenient than carrying my full size bag. And that's kind of where the light bulb moment went off. I said, oh, maybe there's something there. So, you know, kind of progressed from there.
Yeah, in kind of a perfect way. And like everything else sort of seems to have exploded into a lot of other things, which, you know, that's great to see. I'd love to talk about that sort of small business mindset moving into your first couple of years, and understanding that growth is sort of unique. But you had mentioned already, being that the COVID boom had sort of slid into that first couple of years as well. Was it surprising the way things progressed for you? Were there challenges along the way other than just the acquisition of material?
Yeah, so creating like a good product, thankfully, was never a concern of mine. Just the background, I knew kind of what the standard should be. What was tough was, you know, logistics and supply chain during COVID, because factories getting shut down and then they were partially open, or, you know, a fabric supplier was shut down. So then our assembly supplier couldn't put it all together, things like that. Number one. And then number two, you know, container pricing, you know, on average is like $5,000 or $6,000 from Asia down to like Port of Long Beach or California, if you will. At that time, it was like 20 grand because of just the supply and demand and the availability of containers at that point. And the demand also then slingshotted back because everyone got the stimulus check. So there's a lot of people buying at home, buying online with like free money. So there's a whole bunch of demand for product. So container rates just went like through the roof because there was a lot of demand from the consumers, but two, there wasn't that many available shipping containers. So that was really hard, especially when you're trying to rob Peter to pay Paul to like fund the next purchase order. Was extremely difficult to navigate. And, you know, we had to, you know, work with some people who, I wouldn't say predatory loans, but, you know, charged a high interest rate from a small business. And you're like, well, this is what we have to do to like kind of keep the business going. You know, and you think, oh, once we sell through this many golf bags, we'll have all this money to, you know, reinvest into marketing or employees. But then, you know, now you have to get two containers of golf bags. So you have to use that money to fund like kind of the next purchase order. So it's kind of this like hamster wheel a little bit, but, you know, you just, you figure it out, I guess.
Yeah. I love that. That crazy couple years that, that everyone felt in a positive way, but also it just, the challenges were unique, I feel like, at the time. And, I'm curious, over the last couple of years, as things have cooled off a little bit, or at least from my perspective, have cooled off a bit, were those initial experiences incredible growing pains that once you got through it, things felt a bit easier, or has it shifted a lot since then?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I'm just kind of maybe, and a lot of people are just accustomed now. Like I was like, oh, once we get through this thing, then it'll be smooth sailing. But every year it seems like there's been like some other, like, you know, kick in the nuts, if you will, where, you know, the iOS changes for like Meta, right? And that screwed up everything from like a e-commerce perspective. Then there's like the tariffs last year, right? In February, and it was just like 50% up, and then it was 30%, and then it was 70%, right? So there's just been a series of things that happen. Now it's the war in the Middle East, right? So you're gonna see like prices go up because of like oil and, you know, the lack thereof, I should say. But there's all these, you know, there's just constantly things changing. And I just think it's always gonna be like that. You know what I mean? And you just have to deal with it and kind of figure out ways to overcome it.
Well, there's no lack of a sense of humor at the office over there, so far as I can tell. And I'd really love to talk about that. You're not just growing a product, you're growing a brand. And, you know, anyone who wants to be humored by a bunch of respectfully goofballs in a golf office is worth going to check out the Instagram, where great videos, some fun stuff's going on over there. Where, at what point did you decide, like, our culture needs to be fun and entertaining and relatable?
Yeah, I mean, I think it stems from maybe my, you know, and I guess even my co-founders, like, none of us like grew up at the country club, right? And, you know, we obviously liked golf as much as the next guy, and you want to follow etiquette and always be respectful. But I think we came in at a time where you say, hey, golf doesn't really have to be so stuffy and so exclusive, right? And then our DNA really starting in that par three course, you know, when you think about a par three course, it's usually like the adopted stepchild, you know, of golf, right? Where there's usually not a club pro, you know, sometimes it's, you can just roll on there. The greens fees are $10 or $12, you know, you're done in an hour and a half, it's nine holes. There's no, like, you can't put your handicap in, right? So it's just a lot more casual. And especially here in San Diego, you know, when you go out in the summer down at Loma Club in Point Loma, you can see the ocean, there's palm trees. There's some regulars in flip-flops and tank top and a speaker going, and they're just kind of, you know, hitting a few wedge shots, you know, having a beer, hanging out and kind of enjoying the good weather. And so I think there's just a multitude of factors that kind of led up into, you know, forming Sunday Golf, definitely maybe subconsciously intentional, but, you know, I wish I could say I was that pragmatic or whatever. And then I think the second thing is, when you look at, and no shade to like the big guys like Ping, Titleist, you know, TaylorMade, Callaway, they are the, you know, the Mount Everest at the top, right? But can't really tell what each one stands for, right? Or what their brand values are. You know, they're all very, in my opinion, homogenous, obviously very, very great brands, but, you know, they're all catering towards, you know, very aspirational driven marketing, where they say, hey, buy our clubs or buy our balls, you'd be the next Tiger Woods or Rory McIlroy, right? And, you know, it's funny when you step back and think about it, you go, well, actually 99% of the golfers aren't ever going to be Tiger Woods or Rory McIlroy or trying to play college or play on the Corn Ferry, right? So I think there's a big market to address kind of that casual golfer who, look, we love talking about it, we love watching it, we love thinking about it, but a lot of people have kids or a busy job and they just can't golf as much as they want to, right? And so I think that's kind of where it all stemmed, and just the need to be different, because otherwise if you just tried to play the same game everyone else is playing and they have, you know, deep pockets, you're never really going to be able to stand out. So that's how I think, like, I don't know if it was a conscious decision, but you know, just kind of happen that way, so to speak. And selfishly, we have just as much fun in the office making the videos as people do watching it, and so I think it's definitely like, it's kind of it works itself out.
Well, I think the great part about that is there's a level of engagement, like it just resonates with people. You know, I just watched the video about 20 minutes ago with you had an intern who's looks like he's about the same age as my boy at 10, demanding his own golf bag, right? And skipping out on work. Really funny stuff. And it's like, man, this is the kid who's you know, playing the US kids set.
Yeah.
And he wants all the cool head covers and the cool bag, and like he's just got the stock stuff. And you know, I it's just so relatable when this kid rolls in with confidence and says, you know, I'm out.
yeah. And that kid is actually Patton. He's an incredible junior golfer that one of our guys was out playing at the ranch in Laguna Beach. It's this like nine hole course. And he has a Sunday Golf bag. And then Patton and his dad pull up and they also had Sunday Golf bags. And we're like, wow, this is so cool. And then come to find out Patton was like, you know, ranked in the top 100, you know, junior golfers at age 7. And they're just up, we're in San Diego, they're up in like Laguna. And we've just kind of stayed in touch, and it's been fun to watch his like progression. They've kind of helped us out too, so it's been a cool little organic relationship.
That's awesome. I'm interested because you made references to the big boys, but you know, in a lot of ways, their relevance, their origin story, their focus is golf club, and I think there's a pretty stark difference between a company who strives to be them in product for club, for example, or ball, for example, and then something else entirely when you chase it in products like golf bag. Because I think there's a level of ability to be way more competitive in something like that than maybe something like a golf club, especially when you talk dollar for dollar type of thing. Do you feel like that's a good perspective to have?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, and I've said this multiple times, where thankfully a golf bag, unlike clubs and balls, to your point, is not going to change your score. Whereas depending on the clubs you get fit for, you know, or the ball you play, whether you're, you know, a high handicap or a low handicap, can take a few strokes off, right? So to your point, maybe that is why it is so aspirationally driven. Where they make all their money is clubs and balls. Golf bags for them is considered an accessory, right? And so, like, obviously we have accessories like hats or head covers. We definitely don't pay as much, you know, we don't give it as much TLC, right? Because, hey, all of our money and revenue and marketing dollars go into like promoting our bags, and, you know, our designers on staff, et cetera, are all golf bag designers, right? So thankfully, yeah, we look at golf bags as kind of almost like Switzerland in a way, where it's neutral, you know. It's like, hey, look, this, you know, if this bag can just represent who you are as a golfer, as a person, that's who we want to attract, right? And then, yeah, so we do have more flexibility, to your point, because it's not performance driven.
But it's sort of the hard part too, and where you don't have to be stuck, is that a guy who plays an entire bag of, let's say, Callaway clubs isn't going to go buy a TaylorMade golf bag, right? They're either going to buy the specific brand that they play, or yeah, they're going to go to one of those agnostic brands that doesn't really have a direct tie-in. And I think that's become one of the more fun things to experience over the last, let's say, 5 to 10 years, maybe, in golf, is people realize, like, accessorizing my golf profile, head covers, golf bag, golf shoes, things that really make them stand out from others is really becoming a thing. So I want to jump over to design in total, but I don't want to distance our conversation too much to the fact that you guys actually have layered a lot of your product. You have a lot of options now. So let's try and focus a little bit on just overall design quality and sort of that commitment to, I believe you have a pretty great warranty on your product as well. So could you talk on that a bit?
Yeah, we have a lifetime warranty on all our products. You know, for me, it was kind of table stakes when we launched it, where it's like, look, if it's our bad and something happens to it, we're going to fix it, right? You know, who are like great brands that come to mind that have that same kind of policy? It's like Costco, Nordstrom's, you know, there's a few others, right? And so I just thought it just made a lot of sense. And then, yeah, when it comes, again, I think we have maybe the flexibility, if that's the right word, to be a little bit more carefree and fun loving on the marketing, because at the end of the day, I'm confident in the product we're putting out is very, very well made, you know? So sometimes you see, not in golf necessarily, but look, you could have the best marketing in the world, but if the product sucks, it's not going to last a long time, right? And then vice versa, if you have like really, really good product, but you don't have any marketing, well, it's going to be hard to sustain that business because people don't know about it. So, you know, I don't know if under promise and over deliver is the right word, but maybe people see, hey, they're, you know, just kind of happy go lucky or whatever the word is, and they don't take the product too seriously. Thankfully, it's not the case, you know? So everyone's been really, really happy. And another metric that we always look at is like our return percentage. You know, we want to keep that as low as possible, because that means like we've set the expectations with the consumer and they're very, very happy with the product for the price point, et cetera. So yeah, product is something we take like super seriously. And thankfully, just with my background, with our industrial designers background, we have like extensive experience in soft good design, which is what a golf bag is.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about product expansion from not like what's coming, but what started to what it is now. Because, you know, Sunday golf to me, Sunday bag has a stigma, and it, good, bad, or indifferent, that's what it is. But you guys aren't just Sunday golf bags now. You have a wide variety of product, not to mention weight and quality as well, that accommodates probably every golfer who's looking for a golf bag at this point. So so where did it start, and what made you scale up to all these extra options?
Yeah, I mean, when we started, we just thought, hey, we'll make a part three bag and, you know, just make it a whole bunch of colors and have some fun, right? It wasn't like, hey, we've got this, again, like 5 or 10 year roadmap on golf bag domination, so to speak. But people said, it started out like, hey, I got the part three bag. Say, hey, I love it. Could you make it just a little bit bigger and add a double strap? So then, you know, I play a half set and I want to use this bag to play a full 18. And you said, you know, you see that question come up multiple times, and at first you ignore it, and then you go, okay, well, there's obviously a little bit of a demand here. So what we started then out with, or what we came out with like the following year, was what we just called the Loma XL. And basically it was just a slightly bigger top where you could fit about 8 or 9 clubs, you know, and then put a double strap on so you could walk the round. And then after that, we came out with the El Camino, which was 10 to 12 clubs. And that was just for maybe people who didn't play a full 14 set, maybe were starters, or it's been super, super popular with women, because they typically don't play all 14, and it's a much lighter bag. And then people said, hey, look, I really like your bags and your quality. Are you guys ever going to make a full size bag? You know, and again, and if you look at the timeline, 2023 or 2024, I think we came out with our Ryder bag, and that won a bunch of awards from Golf Digest, My Golf Spy, etc. And then followed that progression into our cart bag, the Big Rig. So it kind of just naturally grew based off of like customer requests. And, you know, the thing is, it's, I'm like, oh, we look back and it's kind of, I wouldn't say obvious is the right word, but if you just listen to the customer, ask the customers what they want, and then build the product, you kind of get the answers to the test, you know? And so, I don't know, in high school, anytime I somehow came up on the answers to the test, it usually worked out. So that's kind of the philosophy we've been following.
Well, there's a pretty obvious addition to that concept. You have the bags that people love to carry, but then you also have a hole on leather experience that is a very popular thing in golf bag right now. It's a presentation first kind of design, not a weight first kind of design. I assume that was another thing that was extremely obvious. Like it needs to come out, and you know, people want that.
Yeah. I mean, like even at the green grass level, you know, people said, hey, we're doing a member guest. Like we have this great, like, on-site activation where we'll come out to the course for the weekend. We'll have the bags, all of our pockets zip off. So for like logo embroidery or name embroidery, and we'll come out and people show up on the tee box, and you know, they're all getting, you know, the bags, so 144 bags. And, you know, they'll say, okay, well, what's your name? And, you know, they'll say, my name's John Smith. And then like their playing partner, you know, their guest will say, no, his name's, you know, some maybe raunchy nickname or fun nickname. They're like, oh, give him that nicknames. And then we'll just do the like embroidery on site, but one of those prerequisites said, hey, we're kind of like a higher end country club. Do you guys have any like leather style golf bags, you know, for our members? And so again, it was like one or two of those like similar requests. And then we decided, okay, look, we'll go ahead and introduce something like this. And, you know, it's, again, it's proven to be like really successful. And to your point, it's definitely a trend in golf. You know, does that trend sustain? You know, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, people don't seem to mind. The number of guys who I play with who have started incorporating that leather profile into the bag. And listen, at 40 plus, it seems like all the boys are getting lazy in my group.
For sure.
You know, sure. So it's nice to have the double strap to walk from the bag or the car to the driving range, but I don't think they're particularly weight concerned at that point. So, one of the things that really caught my eye, and I'm looking over here just to spot check my your the Sunday Golf website, which is super easy to navigate, by the way. The Rider 250 that's coming soon. When I'm looking at your Instagram, my expectation is like they are holding back stuff like this, and I want to see way, way more of it. So it's a great, I assume it's a 250 anniversary type of endorsement to the US, and great color strap design, lots going on. I assume that was a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, I mean, those like limited edition, we're going to start doing more of those. It's just, those are really fun because golf bags, it's almost like, I'm not really a sneakerhead, but you know, I'm familiar with the culture. You know, it's golf bags design can be a lot like sneakers, where there's just so many patterns and so many opportunities to tell a story in terms of materials and all that kind of stuff. The zippers, you know, just there's versus say maybe irons or balls, right? There's a very, you're very constrained to what you can kind of design with a golf bag. There's so much opportunity. So I know from our design team's perspective, they love doing kind of those limited edition drops when they become available. But yeah, that's definitely going to come out July 4th. I think we're going to start pre-selling it here soon. But yeah, it'll be a fun collection.
And you'd mentioned this is one of those limited things that are going on. Will golfers have a chance to expect more of this type of stuff, or are you just playing it as you go?
Yeah, no, a little bit of both. I think, you know, when we see the opportunities, we'll definitely try and take advantage of them. Obviously, the 250th birthday of the USA only comes, you know, every 250 years, obviously. But when there are like cultural moments, and we have the opportunity, we're definitely going to look to do it. And then we have some cool collaborations coming. One that I can speak of right now is doing a collaboration with like Bob Marley. So we're using like cool like hemp canvas on like the side of the apparel pocket, and you know, it's got his like signature on it. So again, at the start you go, hey, what's the crossover, right? But you know, Bob Marley, it's, you know, it's obviously an icon. It's all about, you know, good vibes and hanging out. And so I think 10 years ago it wouldn't be that successful, but now with just a lot of new golfers in the space and golf becoming a little bit more relaxed, you know, it's been really well received so far from like our retail partners and people we've shown it to.
Yeah. Oh, I see my kid walking around with baseball shorts on that have like dripping ice cream with the sprinkles and all that. I'm waiting for that bag to come out.
But
you guys have also done a great collab with Mossy Oak, which I've seen throughout the industry a little bit. And sort of the joke on that is like, well, I'm not buying that, but I don't hunt. I don't spend a lot of time in the woods. There are a lot of people that do. So I assume that's been a really interesting release for you guys.
Yeah, it's one of our best sellers, to be honest with you. I think it speaks to maybe the golfer that, you know, can maybe connect with Sunday Golf better than say some of the other brands, to say, hey, look, I'm an outdoorsman, or I'm a hunter first. And when I'm not doing that, I'm golfing, you know? And so when you look at, it's almost like golf is a secondary sport in a weird way, where, hey, look, I'm a surfer first. And then when I'm not surfing, I'm playing golf, which in actual fact, like Kelly Slater and some of these other like big surfers out here in San Diego and California, they're all like scratch golfers. And you first go, how is, you know, are they just exceptional humans? But, you know, with surfing, they got to wait for like the sets to come in, and, you know, they can't predict that. So then oftentimes it'd be out in Hawaii or some of these like amazing places, and they started playing golf. So, yeah, I think it's just one of those things where people say, you know, golf now is almost, you know, in everyone's life in a way, whether it's Top Golf, the driving range, the simulator golf, et cetera, golf is everywhere. Right. But maybe not everyone identifies as the quote unquote golfer. And so I think that's kind of like the main vein that we hit with these Mossy Oak line. So people go, no, I identify as a hunter, and then I golf sometimes. Right. So that's why it's been, I think, successful.
Mm. Well, I'd love to talk about the accessory market, because I assume while golf bags are relatively structured, the chaos that can go on in accessories seems to be pretty infinite, not to mention Just on design style alone, like looking at the hats a little bit, there's a bunch of different options. You're wearing a pretty cool looking, I assume, snapback sort of trucker style. But it's not just hats. It's like it could be anything: towels, gloves, tees. You know, there's how do you, what's it like to go down that rabbit hole, especially as someone who's deciding like what should actually go on the shelf?
Yeah, I mean, that's something transparently we're always working to get better at, because you do have, like, golf is unique because there's just so much, you know, stuff to that you can make, you know, whereas you look at like basketball or soccer, there's cleats and then there's the ball, right? Whereas golf, there's just so much stuff to club brushes, tees, ball markers, divot tools, etc. The list goes on. So you we can go and do that, right? And then, you know, it's been hard. You know, you get the shiny object syndrome, right? You go, oh, we can do that. It's easy. We'll sell it. And you go, well, if a tree falls in the woods and no one's there, does it make a sound, right? So it's like there's some stuff that is actually really, really great product, but it's on like page 7 of our site, but it's never getting like advertising dollars, or we're not pitching it to retailers. And so you go, well, how are you expecting to really like move this product? So that's something, especially last year when like the tariffs came in, it kind of forced us to say, okay, you know, what is like, you know, it's the 80-20. You want to cut like 10 to 20% of like the SKUs or your product line that are just kind of sitting there. So we've gotten a little bit better with our merchandising strategy over time, but it's always hard to be like, to contain yourself from not doing something, especially if, you know, me and our design team are just really big on gear and products. So you want to like spend time making everything. But, you know, if you're spending all this time making a divot tool, right, that, you know, you sell a couple hundred units a year of, you know, is that the best use of time? So just trying to figure that out as a young company is always like, you know, another one of those challenges.
Is there one product that, well, I'll give you a note. You can choose one of these if you want, or both. That's fine. Is there one product you wish you hadn't taken the leap on? And then there's there one type of product that you wish you had more time to devote and develop?
Yeah, I think we developed a divot fixer ball marker combo thing, and you know, had to open like tooling and like molds for it, and it took a long time, and then we had high MOQs to get it over here. And then when you just look at like the profile, like the price point, it's really hard to move it and compete with people who are doing it, you know, on the higher end, or like, you know, cheap overseas supplier selling it on Amazon for a couple bucks, you know what I mean? So that one was, we kind of got stuck on a bunch of inventory for it, but that's the one that came to mind. And what was your second question?
It's something, what product do you wish you could devote more time to, or wish you had devoted more time to already?
I think there's a big opportunity in like golf bag storage, you know, like the racks that you put in your garage or maybe your home. I've been trying to like noodle on that and figure out, if you have any ideas, like let me know, but how to make that a little bit more presentable or cool, right? You see the things on like Amazon, they're just like that cheap, like metal wire, and you know, there's not much personality or customization there, but it's like, man, this is almost like a gym locker for a lot of golfers. They come home and they put their bag, you know, on that storage rack, and their shoes and kind of all this stuff. So just trying to figure out how we can maybe make that work. And it seems like it's a very complimentary product for our customer base. You know, you're buying a golf bag, well, there's a good chance you need somewhere to put it, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So that's something I think would be really cool. But again, it is like kind of cumbersome. It's heavy to ship. It's, you know, it would be a higher price point. So, you know, would we be able to sell enough units to make it worth it? Or are we just going to like, is it going to collect dust in like the warehouse?
And that's part of the conversation, right? You validate based on quality, but then you have competitors who seem to succeed. You mentioned the wire stuff on Amazon, or, you know, in a world of IKEA.
Yeah, exactly.
What really matters to people, price or quality?
Yeah. That's kind of the ongoing question. We've obviously like proved it out with golf bags, you know, so yeah, like we'll never be able to compete with the people shipping directly from China, like, you know, like that particle board kind kind of stuff, the IKEA stuff you mentioned, you know, so that's where it's like, there's a little bit of like gut feel and taking risks. Obviously you have to, you know, but yeah, you're like, oh, well, it's going to be double the price or 50% of the price. Are people going to see the value? Right. And then obviously me, I'm selfishly, I'm like, dude, it's gotta be easy to manufacture. Cause if you're going to have to ask someone to go and get a whole bunch of nails and screws and put this thing together, it's just like, it's just not convenient. Right. So, sure. You know, but those are those fun problems to solve, where if you then come out with a product that clearly is better, you know, maybe not just like looks cooler, but is functionally is better, will last longer, easy to put together, you know, can have all these, maybe some other new bells and whistles, then now you're confident going into like introducing it. Not to say that it's always going to work, but at least you've kind of made an educated like guess or an educated assumption to, you know, put that into the market.
Gotcha. I just have a couple more product questions and I think we can probably wrap it up, but, I'm curious, and this is something I love to ask people, is there a colorway that seems to be way more popular than others in golf bags? And does it surprise you?
Yeah, I mean, we learned that. Like, we came out, when we launched, we had just like your traditional blue, black, gray, you know, the standard colors. Obviously, black is always going to sell really well. But then we launched this like toasted almond color. It's almost like a cream and like a toasted brown, if you will. And it was, that really opened my eyes to like color theory and color selection, because that quickly became like one of the number one sellers. And I think maybe it definitely skews a little bit more female, but a lot of guys like it too. It's just kind of different, a little bit classy. And then a year or two later, we came out with like a midnight green, which is like kind of like a mix of like dark green and black and gray. Anyways, that is our number one seller. And so it's just, yeah, you're just like, and not all the colors are going to be a winner, right? But that's why you have to continually test new colors. And, you know, and I thought it would just be an okay colorway, but it's crazy. You put that color on, you know, any bag and it quickly becomes the number one seller, maybe because it's not just your traditional black, blue, or gray. And it's a little bit different and, you know, but still close along that line. So yeah, it's been fun testing new colors, and we're going to try and always come out now with like two or three new colorways each year. And then if those do well, we'll carry them over and kind of cut, let's say if we keep like five to six main colors, and it's almost like a, you know, if you're familiar with like soccer, like a relegation, you know, so, hey, if like the, you know, one of the new ones like kind of outpaces some of the ones that were already in there, okay, we'll cut those two and then continue on like that.
I love that. It's like we're your test dummies on the fly, deciding what works and what doesn't. And I think that's a great way to go. But you don't get so stuck in it, in the mud, the way that some situations end up being. 100%. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Is there one product that, understandably, we're talking about the entire collective of golfers? Is there one product you wish they'd go and take a look at?
Like for us?
Yes.
To like explore and like development?
Just in general, someone goes to your website on an average golfer basis, what's that one product you really hope they click on?
I'd say the Ranger bag. That one we've definitely got the most awards on, and we asked our designer, he comes from like the outdoor industry, like backpacks and tents and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And we asked, hey, look, if we want to compete in that, you know, ultra premium $400 and up price range, how do we do that and not just make it look like another PU leather luxury brand, you know, like a Vessel or something like that? And he said, okay, like, give me a blank canvas and I'll go to work. And so if you look at that bag, it's just full of like these outdoor materials, very rugged, like premium zippers, carbon fiber legs, full length dividers, it's like custom top, et cetera, et cetera. And that was just cool because, you know, we hadn't really gone up into that price range. So that goes back to the risk taking that I talked about, where, you know, hey, we don't know how this is going to do or how it's going to compete in the market, but, you know, we've made an educated guess. And we're confident in putting it out there. And if it fails, it fails. And luckily, like, a lot of people noticed, and, you know, it's just been a cool design process, and then very validating seeing just kind of the sales numbers year over year. So now we expanded into two new colorways in that bag model. And then next year we're going to come out with a cart bag in that family. So it's exciting for sure.
Awesome. Well, hey, Ronan, it was great getting to know your brand a bit today. I think people have been talking about Sunday Golf, and I think anyone who's on social should definitely go spend some time with the folks over there. The content's really fun, and it's a great way to explore some of your new products.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. I appreciate it, and appreciate the audience listening for sure.
Definitely. Hey, if you guys are playing golf this weekend, have a great time. Look at your bag and tell me whether you think you're carrying the right one. If it's too heavy, if you like to carry 10 or 12, or you're tired of carrying your kid's bag, you can probably make something happen there. But sounds like you need to go check out the Ranger bag, and we'll look forward to chatting about it on THP on the community forums with you guys. We'll see you next week. Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey everybody, Don Brown, VP of Innovation, talking to you guys again here at Shaft University. This week's question is about someone who really liked the even flow line of shafts. I did too. Hell, I designed them. They were great. His question is, in the new Project X line, what's similar to that and what should he be testing? And the answer to that is definitely our Denali Frost. Denali is a bit of a descendant from the even flow line. It's got that straight taper profile that's a lot different than our hazardous profiles with a very stiff midsection. So similar feel, but we've upgraded the technology. We've got our new Frost technology in the Denali Frost, which helps with off-center hits, keep it more stable, keep the ball more online. So if you're a big fan of the even flow, I definitely recommend you try out the Denali Frost line. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.